somebody that you don't like, that you disagree with, if that is not checked, if you don't watch that emotion, the possibility of you being in this group is very real. This group, the Sadducees, the leaders in the Sanhedrin, the leaders of the Jews, is who I'm talking about. And so Jesus comes to earth, and they were expecting the Messiah, and of course they didn't expect, after they listened to Jesus and saw him, they didn't expect that. And so the Pharisees, the Sadducees, and others couldn't take it. That's not what they wanted. That's not what they expected. And so it led to them putting in motion the attempt to kill him, turning him over to the Romans, which they had to do by law, and get him killed, get him out of the way. Well, David, that didn't happen today. Really? I said that I wasn't going to do this, but I'm going to. And I don't want you to think that I'm trying to take sides, and stuff, but anyway, it's disturbing to me to see hatred get to this level where you will stoop at anything. You will stoop to any low level that it takes to silence and to get rid of the man and or the woman that you hate. Say, well, this doesn't happen really, and especially among brethren. I'm not even talking about that because it didn't happen among brethren. Little story. Years ago, when I first started preaching, I met a man named Robert Jackson. Robert was a gospel preacher. He's dead now. And one of the finest men I've ever met, a great preacher. I love to hear him preach. So we were talking one day, and this subject came up. Not Matthew 26, but the subject of how you treat people that you hate, that you despise. And here's the story he told me. Back in the 1950s, 1960s, he was preaching. A lot of his preaching was done in Tennessee. And so he was preaching with some congregation in Tennessee. And a pretty large contingent of people in the congregation got dissatisfied greatly with what he was teaching on a particular subject. And so this contingent of people, men and women, went to, I guess it was the elders, and complained. And so they told Robert, said, we want to have a meeting with you this morning after the sermon in the basement in one of the classrooms. Robert said, yeah, it'll be fine. So Robert goes down there, and he walks in the room, in this classroom. As soon as he walks in, the door is shut, the light is cut off, and some man said, watch out, he's got a knife. And then it dawned on Robert what they had in mind. I don't know if their idea was to hurt him, to cut him up, or to kill him. Somebody with sense opened the door and got him out before they could touch him. Don't tell me that brethren can't be guilty. They can. They can. And so I'm not saying watch, be careful what positions you take, and the ones that are not too popular, keep your mouth shut about. No, I'm not saying that. I'm not trying to scare. I'm just saying that it's possible, and don't be surprised. If you find yourself in a situation like this with the elders, the chief priests, the scribes. Yeah? If you hate somebody enough, it will drive you to doing things that otherwise you would not even think of doing. There's a second group of people that you read about here in this chapter. And it's 12 men. And you know who they are. Yep. And Judas is not the only one. Yeah, it's the 12 apostles. These are the men now that had been with Jesus for the last 3 to 3.5 years. They had seen things and heard things that they had never heard anything like it. And the masses that Jesus spoke to had never heard anything like it. You would think that at the end of some 3 to 3.5 years of being around a man like that, who never did anybody any harm, he only did good. He only taught what was good. He did things that only a man from God and a man who was God could do. So it comes time now for his final hour. Jesus begins to tell them what's going to happen. Back in Matthew chapter 16, in verse 21, from that time Jesus began to point out to his disciples, these 12 men, that it was necessary for him to go to Jerusalem and to suffer many things from the elders, chief priests, and scribes, and to be killed, and be raised up on the third day. Then the next verse. And yet, Peter, who else but Mr. Speak Before You Think, and yet Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him. Now, get the scene. Peter is rebuking God in flesh. What he's doing. You don't know what you're talking about, Jesus. I'm paraphrasing now, but that's... Yet Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him, rebuking the Son of God, the man who he had seen do miracles, teach things that he had never heard before. He rebukes him and tells him, you know, you just don't know what you're talking about. He began to rebuke him, saying, God forbid it, Lord. This shall never happen to you. I can't imagine what it took for Peter to utter those words to Jesus and what must have gone through Jesus' mind. Well, we kind of know what went through his mind because Jesus opened his mouth. He turned and said to Peter, get behind me, Satan. I wonder if Peter ever thought that Jesus would address him that way. Just as Jesus never thought Peter would address him that way. Get behind me, Satan. You are a stumbling block to me. For you are not setting your mind on God's purposes, but men's. Now let me ask you, and don't jump to a conclusion that is unwarranted. We're going to read about another man in this chapter. Judas. Who decided that he was going to sell Jesus into the hands of the men who wanted to kill him. Who was the greatest sinner here? Judas or Peter? Do you cut Peter some slack because he had been with Jesus? Well, Judas had been with him, same as Peter had been. And yet, how many other of the disciples disappointed Jesus on this occasion? Don't be afraid to say it.
They all did.
Whoever said that, yes. Thank you, Wyatt. That's right.
But they all did.
To make this be all
back on people.
You know, Jesus had to go to him and say, wake up. Don't go to sleep on me. I'm paraphrasing now. Wake up. Don't go to sleep on me. I need you. Jesus needed these men. And in the time of need, Peter took the lead and denied Jesus, and the others decided to go to sleep and then later on go fishing. I'm not saying that we shouldn't condemn Judas for what he did. We should. But let's be careful that we don't do some of the things that Peter did, denying the Lord three times. I didn't know him. No, you got the wrong guy. This is a little off the subject, but later in life, what happened to Peter that makes you realize, well, Peter really outgrew his weaknesses? You remember what happened to Peter? What Peter became later in life? 1 Peter chapter 5. Peter became what in a local church somewhere? What did he become?
Elder.
I didn't hear.
Elder.
Yeah, whoever said that, that's right. Can you imagine today trying to appoint a man in any local church as an elder who had Peter's past? That's another subject. I'm not going to go chase that one, but that's another subject.
Key word there is past. Key word there is past. And Peter's past.
They were aware?
No. The key word in your statement just a minute ago was a man that had his past.
Oh, yeah, that's
the key
right.
Word
yeah.
Is
that one is current. Yeah,
exactly right. That was behind him. And yet I've known of men who had some stuff behind them. They didn't pass muster because of their past. Okay, that's another subject. But now, here's what I want to do with this. So here are 12 men. One of them takes the lead in betraying Christ. One of them told Jesus he didn't know what he was talking about and denies him. Did Jesus talk sharply to Peter? We just read, back in chapter 6, get thee behind me, Satan. Did he talk sharply to Judas? Yeah. Did he talk sharply to three of the 12 who went to sleep on Jesus? I would consider that pretty sharply, what he said to them in the garden. And then later, they all left him. Did Jesus say or do anything? And we're excluding Peter. We're excluding Judas now. Did Jesus say or do anything to the 11, including Peter and the three in the garden? Did he say or do anything that would leave you with the conclusion that they had been kicked out of this apostles' club? That they could no longer serve as apostles because of what they had just done? No. Not at all. Go back. I don't have to turn back there, but John 14, one of the great, this, if any prayer ought to be the Lord's prayer, it's John 17. I really love that chapter. Read that sometime and notice how Jesus talked about those men. You would have thought they had never done a thing that was wrong. He praised them, talked about their futures and so forth. The reason I bring this up is because a lot of times in our relationships with brethren in a local church, people, not just men, women, can say things and do things that we just think, oh, wish they hadn't said that, wish they hadn't done that. And then we start thinking, God, I guess we can't ask him to lead prayer anymore because what he did. We start excluding, put them in the periphery. Why? Because we disagree with something that they say, some position that they hold, something that they teach that we don't agree with. So what? So what? Do we start pushing people away because they have weaknesses? The 11 had weaknesses. Absolutely did. Jesus never said anything or did anything, even with Peter, to indicate that you're not going to be an apostle anymore if you go talk this way. No, not at all. Not at all. I sometimes hear brethren talk about, and this may get me in this category of somebody who says something that he shouldn't say, but I hear brethren talk about being very, very critical of the idea of unity in diversity. Ever heard anybody get up and talk about, we don't practice unity in diversity here? Yeah, you do. You just don't know it. I guarantee you there are people, say I know this, there are people who are sitting on the end of the bench and in between a lot of you tonight. And if they told you how they really feel about issue 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, you'd go, God, you mean you believe that? Yeah, really do. They don't make a big deal out of it, but they believe something that you think is just unconscionable. How can you do that? The only kind of unity, that you're going to have in a marriage past 6 months is unity in diversity. And take that out to about 70 years. And you ask that couple that are celebrating 70 years of marriage, and they can't take their eyes off one another. Still. Ask them if they ever disagree on anything. Yeah. It's amazing that we know what can make a marriage last 70 years, but don't know how to get along with brethren in a local church. That is just unbelievable. Read chapter 26 of Matthew, and watch how Jesus dealt with these men that we know he had problems with, and how he didn't deal with them and how he did deal with them. Then there's a third group, and I'll end this on a positive, hopefully. From time to time, and this comes from people in the world, there are those who hate the Bible. They can't stand what the Bible teaches. And so, in order to sully it in the eyes of people, they will charge the Bible with teaching things that are abominable. One of those, and this I know y'all have heard this one, Paul was a misogynist. He hated women. The Bible is an anti-woman book. I mean, from beginning to end. The women are portrayed as slaves, as walking behind the husband 4 or 5 steps with their head down and all this kind of stuff. For most people who make that statement are lying. They know better. They're just lying. I'm convinced of that. And I think there are a few who believe that probably that's right. Well, read Matthew 26. out of all the characters, out of the two groups that we just got through talking about, out of all the characters in Matthew 26, what group of characters rises above and shines like a bright sun? The women. Every single one of them. They're the shining light. They're the ones buying expensive ointment and pouring it on the head of Jesus. They're the ones about whom Jesus said that what you did will be talked about for generations yet to come. They're the ones that Jesus elevated, not the 11 or the 12, and certainly not the Sadducees and the priests. No, not the men in Matthew 26, but the women are the ones who, in fact, if you go through the New Testament and you just take a look at passage, and there are women in the New Testament that didn't have a very good reputation. I understand that, and the Old Testament as well. But by and large, Romans 16 is mentioned, I've forgotten now, 10 or 12 women who were closely associated with Paul in his ministry. Basically, he didn't say this in so many words, but basically he was saying, I don't know what I'd do without those women. They've been so close to me and have helped me so much in my ministry, I don't know what I'd do without them. Women are, instead of put down, they are placed on a level that I wish that I could be in. That was Jesus and women. And again, you see that in the Old Testament, and you see it a lot more times in the New Testament, where the women are portrayed as being extremely spiritually minded. Okay. Any questions? And when I say this next thing, I mean it. Any disagreements? I don't think I'll be called for a meeting downtown to shut the door.
Don't have a
yeah. You have a... yeah.
The world has hijacked that phrase to mean something entirely different. So I think if we take it from a worldly standpoint, we can confidently say that we do not do that the way the world, because the world is saying accept the sin and right. Call it okay.
Yeah.
Also, the individuals that may, your example of the 11 that Jesus told them that not one of them was going to stay with him. They were that night. They were all going to betray him. But they did turn around. But if somebody continually causes trouble, then you have a decision to make. If somebody holds a view, and for example, if the elders talk to this individual and they continually stir it up in the congregation, then something's got to be done about it.
I agree with you. We had a man when I was in Corpus that real good fellow, became a good friend of mine. And one day, he and I, just the two of us, were talking. And he made it real clear to me that he had no problem with a piano or an organ in the assembly. And I didn't say anything because I knew him and I knew that he would never, ever try to push it. If he did, we'd have a problem. And that's the kind that there is a type of unity in diversity that we have to say, okay, now, there are some things that we cannot do. Understand that. But just to disagree with someone, just to say, I don't believe that. Okay, that started with me and my wife a month or two after we married. She was always wrong, of course. But I learned a lot from her. There are some senses in which unity and diversity is a natural thing Can it go too far? Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
When we find out that we disagree with somebody and we think that, you know, we have scripture behind us or whatever, that's an opportunity for us to ask, understand, what are they looking at, to study more ourselves, and hopefully that person wants to do the same thing. So you both grow. You may still disagree when the day is over, but hopefully you take it as an opportunity to learn about the Word and about that other, why does that other person come to that conclusion? And why do you come to your own? And in the purpose of growing and in love, not in trying to butt heads and always be right.
Have I told the story? This is probably shouldn't be done, said, but have I told you the story about what I did in Corpus Christi a few years ago? I'd been wanting to do this for years. And I finally got up the nerve to do it. We were having a class on Sunday evening in the auditorium about some controversial things. And so I got over in the office one Monday morning and I came up with a list of about 25 or 30, I have forgotten now, questions. What do you believe about X, Y, and Z? And I told people, I said, you don't have to fill this out. And if you do, do not put your name on this, because that's not what I'm after. Nobody's going to try to find out who you are. And I mean, I picked out all the big ones. When I say all the big ones, I mean all of the big topics that we normally go to Fifth City with. I mean, I picked them out. Passed it out. And about 3 weeks later, they came in. And I read over that thing, and I thought, really? Next one. No kidding. Yeah, next one. And these were people who were gathering together, taking the Lord's Supper together, sitting on the same bench probably together. And they held views on things that were 180 degrees away from one another. And yet, we were getting along. Because one thing, nobody was pushing what they knew to be a hot button topic. That little experiment, and I'm not suggesting you do it here. That's not where I'm going with this. All I'm saying is that you would probably be surprised at what others that you assemble with and you're good friends with, even on homosexuality, that one person said they weren't sure about whether or not that's sinful, and abortion. Those were the two big ones, and we just had one person that said they weren't sure about that. Now, I did not take that survey and sit down and come up with 20 sermon outlines. Well, I'll get you on that. I didn't do it. The elders looked at it with me, and we shared it in the class, and we went right along, functioning perfectly, even though now they knew, if they didn't know before, I'm worshiping with people who, yeah. Marriage, divorce, remarriage? Oh, yeah, that was the big one. I mean, I'm just mentioning ones that come to my mind. So don't think that we've got this little neat group here and we just all agree with everything. No, you don't. No, you don't. And as you get to know people, some of that may come out. Other people, and I mean what I'm about to say, other people are going to have better sense than to open their mouth. They'll just won't say anything, which is fine. How did we get off on that tonight? Oh, unity and diversity. Yeah, that's what it was. Okay. All right. Now, I hope, I really hope I'm not stirred. I want to talk about these three groups of people because I think it's very practical to realize these three groups really stand out in this chapter. And we have the same issues, if you want to use that word, we have the same issues today that they had back then. It's just many times people today keep their mouth shut and they don't say anything, which sometimes is a proper thing to do. Okay, now, okay, anything else on any of that? All right, let's start with verse 1. We're not going to finish this, but when Jesus had finished all these words, this was back in chapter 23, 24, 25, he said to his disciples, "You know that after 2 days, the Passover is coming and the Son of Man is to be handed over for crucifixion." We've already looked at Matthew 16 and what Peter said on another occasion. And so he begins to tell them, it's time. I know that Peter and maybe some others don't believe this, but it's time. It's going to happen. So at that time, the chief priest and the elders of the people were gathered together in the courtyard of the high priest named Caiaphas, and they plotted together to arrest Jesus covertly and kill him. Come back to that in a minute. But they were saying not during the festival because a riot might occur among the people. This is a horrible time in our culture to even bring this up. I think I'm safe here. To even infer that the Jews killed Jesus. Would a fair reading of these verses cause you to conclude that the Jews killed Jesus? I'm not getting anything vocally on that. Did you have something else?
Do verses 3-5 say anything else?
I'm sorry?
Do verses 3-5 say that they don't? They actually say that the answer is yes.
Okay,
verses 3-5 specifically say that they did. Or at least that.
This is just one of the verses that say that they wanted to. Now, I wrote an article years ago, I didn't put it here in my notes. It was entitled, "Did the Jews Kill Jesus?" And there are about 10 to 12 passages, and this would be one of them, that would lead an honest individual to come to the conclusion, not only did they will it and wish it, they did it. I don't know how you, what?
Here's another one that actually says that they did. 27 verse 18 says, "For Pilate knew that because of envy, the Jewish leaders had delivered him up."
Yeah, Bill O'Reilly, nut he is, wrote a book, and I didn't read the book. I read some of his other kill books, but not that one. Had to be PC with this. And, Jews didn't kill Jesus. Well, just because you say the Jews killed Jesus does not mean you hate Jews. Any more than today, I say that the Germans killed Jews in World War II. Does that mean that today I ought to be on a jihad against Germans? No, it's just a matter of history. This is a historical fact. Jews killed Jesus. It does not follow, then, that I need to persecute Jews today. I would be as opposed to that as anything in the world. So let's not deny history. I don't care where it goes, just don't deny history. It's just a historical fact. That's what they did.
Peter, on the day of Pentecost, declared clearly the Jews killed him.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, that would be another one. Yeah, that's right. And I think Peter was a Jew. Yeah, that's right. Jews killed Jesus, and even the Jews, some of them admitted that he did. All right. So they were plotting to kill Jesus, but not at the Passover. Because the riot may stir up a riot among the people. Then in verse 6, we come now to the positive, feel-good part of this study. Now, when Jesus was in Bethany at the home of Simon the leper, a woman came to him with an alabaster vial of very expensive perfume, and she poured it on his head as he was reclining at the table. I forgot to put it in my notes what this cost, what this vial of, it was, one of these was a year's wages. I think this is the passage that it talks about the cost of this would have been the year's wages of a laborer. That's what we're looking at here. But the disciples were indignant when they saw this and said, why this waste? Wasting something on Jesus? Really? Why this waste? For this perfume could have been sold for a high price and the money given to the poor. Now, I don't know. You take this. Did they really mean that? Or I don't know. We're not. Anyway, but Jesus, aware of this, said to them, why are you bothering the woman? For she has done a good deed for me. For you always have the poor with you, but you do not always have me. For when she poured this perfume on my body, she did it to prepare me for burial. Truly I say to you, here's his conclusion, very upbeat, but wherever the gospel is preached in the whole world, what this woman has done will also be told in memory of her. And that's what we're doing tonight. Now, were these apostles, were the disciples, did they really think that this was a waste, or were they just trying to think that Jesus might think, yeah, let's appreciate them talking about it. I don't know. We're not told. But Jesus did not have any positive thoughts about their criticism. About why?
In John 12 is a parallel passage.
Yeah.
It says that at least Judas definitely didn't, but we're not told about the rest of them.
Yeah.
And that's also the one that tells us that it was a year's wages.
Is that the one? Yeah, it's John 12.
Okay. It is. That's parallel to verses 6 to 13 here.
So I guess we could end tonight on this positive note, that here was a woman that loved the Lord so much that she did this, as opposed to Peter, who told him he didn't know what he was talking about, and later on denied him, as opposed to Judas, who for 30 pieces of money turned him over. Women all through this chapter are portrayed in the highest, or at the highest level. And let's just end our study on that high note and be glad that we have. Now, there are obviously things in Matthew 26 that, we don't look too favorably at the disciples and at Peter and Judas, of course, but then the women that were just, and just think about, I guess this is appropriate to say, think about the women in your life who have done for you in innumerable ways what she did for Jesus on this occasion. And you can come away with a great appreciation for the women in your life, just as Jesus had so many women in his and Paul had so many in his. Okay, anything else before we conclude? All right.
Do you think she knew that he was about to die, given what he says, that she prepares me for my death? Do you think she knew that or may have heard him talk
about
that?
Now?
That she knew that he was going to die?
Oh, I think so. Yeah, in fact, that's another thing. That, you know, Peter said, it's not going to happen. And here's somebody who knows that it is. Yeah. Yeah. They were more perceptive than the disciples. Okay, thank you very much.